Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. We are back. It's the Knicks at Night podcast. I'm your host, Sean Aquino. You can follow me on Twitter at saquino34. Welcome back to the program. It's been a couple of months off. We have almost all of us are here tonight to kind of give our thoughts on the past season, a season review. And as we look ahead to the future, we're going to debate Phil Jackson, the job he's been doing, who our next head coach is going to be, why is Phil Jackson so stubborn, why is Phil Jackson such a freaking genius. These are the questions we're going to ask ourselves tonight. And as always, we have Mr. Gregory Armstrong on the phone at gstrong011. We have Mr. Frank Nutt on the phone at Frank N-U-T-T on Twitter, and Peter Turi, who is the founder and creator of NickSwag.com. Peter Arturi is joining us tonight. He's at Pete_Arturi. Is that right, Pete?
That's right, buddy.
There you go. It's good to hear your voice, Pete. It's been a long time, my friend.
Long time. Nice to talk to everybody.
Yeah, definitely. Frank, are you there? Or is that Greg?
I'm here. It's Greg.
What's up, Greg? How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I haven't seen you since L.A. in person. I mean, obviously we text every day. You know my frustration.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not really feeling this right now. But hopefully this summer we can gain some traction, get a good team for next year, get a good coach. A lot of questions have to be answered. Key offseason right now for Mr. Phil Jackson.
So absolutely. I mean, yeah, you're right. It's good to hear your voice. You came out to L.A. to visit. We went to the Knicks and the Clippers over the weekend. It was great to meet you. My wife and I just, you know, very, very happy to meet you. And again, thank you for the gifts for the baby, the little Knicks gear. Baby should be coming in July. So we're really excited. And, of course, man, I was really, really thoughtful. So thank you for that. As you could tell, guys, listeners, we are pretty much a family. I've been out to New York and I've met Frank before. Greg came out and visited me, and we're waiting for Pete to come out to L.A., or one day I'll be able to go to New York and visit Pete one day, but I'm sure we'll make that connection. But this is, if you haven't listened before, we used to do this show pretty consistently. We took a couple months off, but we usually try to do some shows after Knick games. We try to talk about the season as it progresses, but now we're going to take a quick step back. I want to start before we get into the whole head coaching stuff. I want to start with you, Pete. I want to get your sense of looking back on the past, on this season. Obviously, Derek Fisher got fired midway through. I just want to get your sense. What were the positives of this season, and what were the negatives, and did one thing weigh more than the other? Did we have more positives or more negatives than you expected?
When the season started, nobody was expecting anything from KP. I think he came on strong early, and I think that gave everybody a sense of winning. And, you know, they were competitive for a while, and then the bottom just fell out. You can say injury. You can say that the rest of the league just caught up to us. You know, not every team can play a full game, right? So you hear that from other coaches. They all say that you have to get through the whole game. And some teams can turn it on at the end of quarters. Some teams can't. And the Knicks just couldn't do it. They couldn't play a full four quarters. So, do I think it's a negative season? I mean, compared to what? Compared to the season before, it's a positive season. But, you know, I think we're all competitive. We want to win. I think we're tired. And so, to me, it's a disappointment that every season goes by and they're not competitive towards the end of the season or even in the middle. You know, you just get to the playoffs, and they're just not competitive, and it's a frustrating feeling, and I think we're all sick of it, we're all tired of it, and, you know, we just want to get better, and I think that anytime they don't make the playoffs, it's a failure.
Right. Greg, your thoughts on looking back on this past season?
Well, coming into the season with the free agent acquisitions that Phil made, and also with having a lottery pick, you want to, you know, have a high hopes for the season. But I was really disappointed going in with the transactions, the free agents. We weren't able to really land that big fish type of free agent couldn't get a meeting with LaMarcus Aldridge. I mean, we've been down that Greg Monroe road. Good thing we didn't get him. But I felt like maybe there was a chance that we could get, you know, more of a signature player coming in. So, you know, I kind of figured going in that we wouldn't really do so well. But, you know, KP was a pleasant surprise, as Pete said. I mean, he turned out to be everything you could ask for and more. He's got a great personality. I got a chance to meet him on more than one occasion. And he's going to be, you know, good to have going forward as the leader of the franchise. But we got a lot of work to do. I mean, as far as, you know, with Fisher getting fired, you know, all these rumors about Rambis, and I'm sure we're going to get into that later on, about the coaching situation. So overall, going to the games night in and night out, it got to be really, really tiring, you know, toward from the middle of the season on, when I'm going to these games and knowing that we, for the most part, don't really have a chance of winning. So hopefully next year, after we, you know, make some moves this summer, hopefully things will be different. So that's where I'm at right now.
Right. It's one of those things where the season, it was almost like two seasons in one. You know, it started off with such promise, playing 500 bosses the first 44 games of the season. KP's extremely promising. For whatever reason, Jerry and Grant wasn't getting the consistency in minutes. Basically, until Jose Calderon went down, he never really got the minutes. And when he did play 30 minutes a game, he averaged 14 points, 4 assists, shot 38% from three. He was able to get into that rhythm, showing some good promise. So, but at the end of the day, we still ended with a 9-19 record with Kurt Rambis as head coach. Right before that, Fisher, you know, finishing his career as Knicks coach, going 1-9, which is pretty terrible. So essentially, the Knicks went 10-28 in their last 38 games of the season. So it was like we suffered through the high, you know, a high of, hey, our team really is going somewhere, to, oh my God, we're just as bad as we were last year when we only won 17 games. So, yeah, that's what was kind of odd about it. And I think the way it ended really is kind of skewering the way the majority of folks are looking at this season. Because if you look at it, yes, we did have the best percentage increase. We did win 15 games more than we did last year. So that could be cause on paper for optimism. But I think ultimately for me, the way I look at it, and I know we've talked about this before in our text messages, is that you have Porzingis, who's young, you have Grant, who's young, and you have all of your draft picks moving forward, of course not this year. And you have, you know, if Derek Williams and Aaron Afalo opt out, and we stretch Calderon, about $36 million in cap room. So we do have the ability to at least make our team better. Obviously, moving forward, this upcoming free agency period should be all about solidifying our backcourt. Now, that's when we get into the whole discussion about the triangle offense, right? Do you guys truly think that there are going to be good guards out there, either the Mike Conleys or, you know, Ken Bazemore, these free agents, will any of them say, you know what, I don't want to go to the Knicks because the triangle system is going to limit the way I typically like to play basketball? Greg, I'll start with you. Do you think that the triangle offense, from far away to these free agents, might be somewhat of a turnout?
Well, first of all, you know, more than likely it's all about money first. I mean, money talks. You know, if you offer the guy a right amount of money, I don't think he's going to say, well, because of the triangle, I'm not going to come, you know, if you reach his, you know, his money. But if he can get that same money somewhere else, like in a situation like Mike Conley Jr., he's not going to come here just to run the triangle. I mean, these guys are looking to get paid, you know, but I don't see that as a selling point. On the other hand, I don't see where Phil's going to go in and tell these guys, look, we're going to run the triangle. It's going to make you a better player. It's going to make us an exciting team to play, you know, to be a part of. And I don't think guys are going to be knocking down his door saying, oh, I want to sign up for that. You know, the triangle right now is in question. You know, the only guy that's won with the triangle consistently is Phil Jackson. And we all know the type of players that he had, the Jordans, the Pippins, the Shaqs, you know, the Kobes, and even the role players that he had, the Ron Harpers of the world. You know, the Rick Foxes, you know, he had intelligent role players, guys that were veterans, guys who knew how to play basketball. You know, now we're trying to build a team with a lot of young guys and try to teach them the triangle when they can barely learn how to play basketball right now in the pros. So it's been really difficult these first two seasons and getting guys to come in and really want to, you know, buy in and learn this offense. It's been tough. So I don't know where we're going with this. Me, myself, I would just rather hire a good coach, regardless of his triangle, and just get the best players available and fit into a system based on the type of players that we have, instead of trying to pigeonhole everybody into this triangle. It seems like it ain't working these last couple of years. But Phil's sticking to his guns. He's still, you know, he's a firm believer that this thing is going to work. So we're just going to have to wait and see what's going to happen this year. You know, if he's going to bring back Rambis and if he's going to be more involved and they're going to really, really try to push this triangle, hopefully they can get some guys that can come, that can run it. If not, it's going to start getting ugly for Phil in New York. Because if you don't win here after a certain amount of years, I don't care about your 11 rings that you had when you was with Chicago and L.A. and all of this other crap. We want to see what you're doing now for us. It's what you've done for me lately. And so far, Phil is not getting it done in the win column in New York. And that's not gonna be pretty if this continues.
And Pete, what do you think about that? Do you think any free agents are legitimately going to say, I don't want to go there because of the triangle?
Yeah, I mean, I think Greg's right. Money is always an issue, but the fact that everyone has money this year is bad luck, shit luck for the Knicks, as usual. But the pool of players and coaches to come here based on the triangle is very selective, and that's an issue. You know, we can talk about that later, about the whole coaching search. It's not wide enough, and the player search is the same thing. I mean, you're not going to bring in small guards, small, quick, penetrating guards, because they're not the prototypical triangle guard. I mean, that's an issue for me. I don't know if it's going to work. I mean, I would think that a great system would work anywhere, but the NBA has changed drastically, right? Doesn't mean that you have to go with that change. Doesn't mean that you have to become a three-point happy team. I mean, not every team has to be like that. I mean, what's the next fad? It'll be something else, and everyone will be doing the same thing. Whoever wins the championship, they always want the best assistant coach from that team and become their head coach. And, you know, everyone follows everybody. So I understand what Phil's trying to do. And as far as the role players is that he got these players, and they became all-time great role players in his system. And he made them, he cultivated them, and they evolved into great role players in his system. You know, would they be like that if they were running a different system? I don't know. That's an argument to have. I mean, the guy has a tremendous record, obviously, you know, going back all those years. So I'm fed up with it already. I know Greg is, you know. Yeah. So I get it. I mean, it's the whole thing to me, it's a total shit show, you know. And Phil doesn't care about anything. For what Sean, you always tell me that Phil doesn't care about the media. He doesn't care about what everyone else is thinking. But the problem here is that he needs to get ahead of the story. He needs to name a coach, you know, a reasonable coach, so these negative articles stop, you know, because you can't just let this thing drag on and on and on, and basically you're going to pick the only triangle guy out there. It's a joke. You know, he's got to widen the search. He's got to open up, expand. And then we always talk about through text, when he leaves in 2 years, okay, we have a triangle coach. We're going to run the triangle? No, we're not going to run the triangle. Nobody runs the triangle. No player runs the triangle. It takes so damn long to understand it. And, you know, Melo says it takes an hour to explain it, but yet it takes a whole year to figure it out. You know, I don't even get that. It takes a whole year to figure out a system. So now we're going to have two new players next year in the backcourt, hopefully, right, knock on wood, that we do, and they're going to have to learn the system. It's going to take them, what, 2 months of the season to figure this thing out? So I'm definitely concerned about the whole situation. I get the triangle. I get it. I mean, it's a winning system. And Phil believes in it 100%. He's not going to change his ways. And he's brought him here to do it. He was getting paid to do it. But he's also got to get the players he needs. And if he can't get the players, then it's not going to work, and he's going to leave. So, well, you know, we have to be on board because we're Knicks fans and we don't run the team. But I think everybody's fed up with it except one person, who's Phil Jackson.
My argument here is that we're thinking about the offense, you know, we're focusing on the offense, But truly, and yeah, I know Frank will argue this, that Phil did not upgrade the backcourt sufficiently last summer like we should have. And my argument is, you know what, Patrick Beverley and Corey Joseph wanted to go to Houston and Toronto for a reason. Joseph from Toronto, Beverley was being loyal to Houston, who brought them up. Besides that, what guys would have been out there that we would have been able to get? I don't know. But I think that you could see the difference in the club when Jerian Grant, a guy who's a penetrate, was out there, and he was just a rookie. And he was probably, I would say, two or three times better defensively than Jose Calderon was. And then the numbers prove on the court, when Galloway played, the team was better. And Grant, both. When they played, the team was better defensively. So I'm just in my mind thinking, okay, if you move a slow-footed Afalo and Calderon out of the starting lineup and you put in just average to, you know, good defenders in those spots, you know, I don't know who that point guard is. I really don't know who that is. But I think Jerian Grant could do at least an average job defensively, right? And I think that if you get a Ken Bazemore type guy, a guy who is a good defender, not average, he's a better than average defender, that the team would be light years better. You know, they would gain 5 to 10 wins at least. You know, it'll put them at, they'll be a 500 ball club if they just got two guys that could start and play average defense. And then the offense stuff will kind of take care of itself, right? I mean,
how could you count on Grant?
Think about
how
terrible.
Say,
how terrible
how
we were defensively
Grant?
With those two guys.
True.
Go ahead, Greg.
True. But how could you for sure say that Grant could step in and be an average defender? We don't know that. You know,
well,
I mean,
seen,
he didn't even hardly
right.
play. The coaches didn't even have confidence in him to put him in the game last year. So he's starting from square one next year. So we don't know what we're going to get from him.
Right. No,
yeah.
There's no doubt.
I mean,
I agree that we have to look at free agency for that point guard that could defend. But if not, if he's not there, you know what I mean? Like, I know, Pete, you're talking about Rondo. Rondo doesn't really defend it. You have before. Rondo doesn't defend anymore. So then we'll have
all
another
right.
guy that can't defend. You know what I'm saying? And, like,
yeah,
I can't have another guy that can't defend play point guard.
You got to understand why I'm saying Rondo. Because I think the Knicks are in a really tough spot. I don't think anybody wants to come here. And Greg is right. Money is everything. But everybody's got money, right? So why would Bazemore come here? Why would a decent point guard come here? Why? Because we're not a good team. Okay, you can make an argument on either side, but in the end, we're not a good team. So
you don't
I'm
think anybody
Rondo
would want to play with KC
because Rondo's going to have a small market. I think Rondo's going to have a small market. That's my because mm-hmm. he's obviously got issues and all that stuff. And I
right.
think that he would like to play with Melo. I'm not saying I want Rondo. I just think that it's more of a realistic because we're not going
right.
to get good players. I mean, I'm just trying to figure out why would Bazemore come here. I mean, the only way he's going to come
why
is
would he leave
totally
Atlanta?
Overpay him to the point
because
where the Hawks would
like. Because they traded Hardaway. They traded for Hardaway to take his spot because they knew they would need to pay him. Just like they did with Damari Carroll last year. They let Carroll walk because they don't want to pay anybody anything.
Okay.
I mean, that's
right.
Atlanta's MO, right? So why, you know, why would. And
because
plus,
they have extra money.
Some people would
so
be
everybody has
him.
Extra money now. That's the thing.
Right,
so they can.
You know, they
got
to wrap up Al Horford. Who cares? They got to
so
wrap up
Al Horford.
So they
can sign Horford and resign
Bazemore.
The cap is going up
and
tremendously.
Right.
What?
And Teague and Schroeder. They have to decide on Teague and Schroeder, too, is what I'm saying.
They have a whole other
year. They're
going
to trade.
I'm saying.
From what we've been hearing, Teague is on the trade market, what he was. So
right.
you would think that he might be the guy that they might let go.
Yeah, and he's under contract for another year, so it doesn't matter. They can hold on to him until the deadline. I'm just trying to, like, figure out why would Turner come here, right? Why is he going to leave a winning situation? Because you're going to pay him 4 years, $60 million, and the Celtics are going to say, no, we don't want to pay him that. So that's my point. Like, you're going to have to overpay these guys to the point where it's almost not worth it. But you have to do it because you have to get upgraded
mm-hmm.
talent. That's why I'm just saying Rondo, because Rondo is going to come cheaper than people think. So I think teams are scared of him because of his brain, and I think they're scared of him
mm-hmm.
because he's a little older. And I think he's a veteran. Rambis already said that he would work well in the triangle. And Melo respects him, and he will. And yes, he has issues. I'm not a fan of Rondo. I'm just saying that he will penetrate and get the guys the whole front court. He'll get them the ball where they need them to get. I believe that. But is he a great fit for the Knicks? Probably not. But he's more realistic because I just don't see the other younger guys coming here unless you pay Bazemore 4 years, $72 million. You know, which is totally not worth it. Obviously, he's not worth it. I mean, the salaries are going to skyrocket, but you're going to pay some guy who's, you know, who's averaging what? I mean, even like Crabb, what's the average? 8 points a game? You're going to give him 4 years, $60 million? I mean, it's
no.
Exactly. You're not going to give him that. But if it's between that and having Galloway start, what are you going to do? I mean, you can't have Galloway and Grant in your backcourt next year. You can't do it.
No,
you,
right.
Say you have to pay. So you have to pay.
Wouldn't you rather
pay for a guy who is in his fourth year, a 26-year-old Bazemore, as opposed to a 29-year-old Rondo, a guy that can defend, shoot the three, and fit the system better? I know we don't want to find guys that don't fit the system. So my point is, if you're going to pay Rondo 12 to 15, hey, I would rather pay Bazemore 15 to 18, is what I'm saying. You know, I know it sounds like a lot of money.
Man.
It sounds like a lot of money,
but if you're going to do that, man, if you're going to do that, like, this is another thing. We have to think about what the future is going to be. Is the future KP? So, therefore, we need youth, right? Or are we going to put all of our money towards, you know, 30-year-olds again to make Carmelo happy, right? So, you know,
yeah,
that's the biggest question to me, you know? It's like,
no,
if we get a point guard, Conley, for the next 5 years, then you're basically saying Jerry and Grant's going to be a backup for the next 5 years. Like, so
but maybe he needs time to be
gonna,
a backup for the next 2 to 3 years.
So
you're saying it's 5 years. That's
I
a
mean,
long time. You're giving
well,
Rondo
you
a contract that's going
to
be 3 years
year
the most.
Sure.
You're giving Rondo.
Other guys besides Rondo.
What other guys?
Besides
who are the other guys? We have Jerry and Grant. And who? Who else?
But I was mentioning Conley. I was talking about Conley. Okay, if you're going to
I don't want Conley.
If you're going to offer
he's
Conley
a,
Max or whatever.
A step away from tearing his Achilles. No way.
So Conley in the market is going to make $25 million. Right, so Bazemore
yep.
is probably worth that 15 to 18, and that's my point. Is that
well,
that's
I
the
mean,
reality of the new market, and we have
yeah,
a
new
point guard
yeah.
and shooting
I mean,
guard.
In this market, absolutely not. But yeah, I get it, Sean. I agree with you. I think that they should sign Bazemore, even though he doesn't average a ton of points. He's fiery. He's intense. He plays D. He hit the three. I like him, but is he going to
yeah.
want to come here? That's the question.
And I say,
you know,
if
you
I
offer
say,
him 4 years,
say,
60,
yeah.
he's going to say, okay, I'm coming. I want to come to New York. Is he going to say that? Because if he doesn't, what's your plan B, C, D? What's your plan? I mean,
right.
there's no plan besides Bazemore and Kraft.
And
so
also,
you,
even if we
right.
get, even we get those
ahead,
guys,
Rick.
Even if we get
yeah.
those guys, how much of a difference are
a huge
do we really
I
know
say.
That they're going to make us a playoff team? We don't. I don't know. I mean, these guys.
I don't know either. Yeah.
I mean, there's limit. They're role players on their team, and they're not really counted on to do but so much. When they
yeah.
come here, they're going to be asked to be more of a significant role.
Yeah.
So you know, we don't know how that's going to turn out either.
You're right, and then Greg, you're paying the guy $18 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Okay.
And he's a role player. That's another. I agree with what Greg's saying as well. It's all look. You can frame an argument for either side of the story.
Right.
I mean, it's you have to spend the money because if you don't, Galloway is your starting shooting guard. You pissed off a follow, and he's leaving. You know, everyone can say good riddance to him. Fine, I get it. You know, but still, he's a veteran. He's a 10-year veteran. He lost a step, obviously, but you insulted
yeah.
him, and now he's like, screw you, I'm not coming back. Unless he has no suitors, and then they re-sign him. But
no,
it's just
I mean,
like you have no backcourt at this point besides Jerry and Grant and Tony Roten, who we all like, right? We all like Roten. We don't know he's healthy. You know, the
sure,
worst case
know.
Scenario is that they have to get a starting shooting guard because then at least Roten and Grant can split time at the point guard. And I like developing players. You know, I'm not expecting to make the playoffs next year. You know, if they
no?
do, it's a great
God.
Story.
Another you want to go through another year this?
No,
really?
Greg, no. Obviously not. I don't. Especially you, who's paying a ton of money for tickets. I mean, but realistically, we have a good front court and we have no back court. Are we going to be able to
right.
spend $34 million to get a brand new back court? I don't know. I don't know. I think
well,
we're going to have to overpay
could,
to get
theory,
one of those guys.
You could. Right, you could
that
in theory
be enough money.
Offer two guys $17 million. Yeah, it should be. Go,
that
go ahead,
should
Greg.
Be enough money if Mr. Phil would do his job and recruit some guys to come here. What's going on, Sean? Your boy, he's supposed to be getting us these free agents. He ain't doing jack.
His search is too small.
Let's get to the real
yeah,
deal here.
Well,
Phil is not getting it done. Your
okay,
boy.
What's
up with
you're
that?
Listening to the Knicks at Night podcast. So now we're going to the second phase of the podcast, the debate the dirt, the fighting, the mud thrown at each other. Now we're getting into the good shit. All right, this is the debate. Phil Jackson, I am a Phil apologist, is what most people will say. I know what you're saying. I think that a lot of people thought that Phil Jackson was going to come in and show, put his 11 rings on the table. Year one, we had no cap space, so no one was coming. This is my argument. Last year, the only guys that were willing were LaMarcus Aldridge, and we were up front with him. We said, we want you to play center. He said, no. We said, okay, thank you. Then we don't want to deal with you. I think the same thing happened with Greg Monroe.
You don't think that's a problem right there, though?
No, I don't think it is, because why waste your time putting a guy in a position trying to force feed something? It doesn't make sense.
Don't put him in that position.
Exactly. Don't put him in that position. But imagine if we would have drafted Porzingis and we had LaMarcus Aldridge. So you would have two, power forwards. Who would be our starting center? We wouldn't have been able to sign anybody else. LaMarcus Aldridge would have taken all of our money. And we already knew LaMarcus Aldridge was leading a 50-win team in Portland. Why the hell would he go to a team that just won 17 games? I mean, why? Yep. I don't get, why that makes no sense. To me, once we become a winner, then the free agents come. Phil Jackson is not all about the rings, right? So all the pressure, all Phil has ever said is that he wants to create a culture and he wants to put basketball on an exhibition in a way that fans would love. I forgot what he said, but tell me about an exhibition at Madison Square Garden with team basketball. So to me, when you look at the guys he signed, I mean, Calderon sucks, but he's a team player. Robin Lopez is still pretty good. He's a team player. Kyle O'Quinn's got a great personality, team player. Derek Williams, everybody laughed at, but he ended up being more worth more than the $4 million a year. Afalo, he proved he's done. His legs are done, right? My point is that these were not deals that killed us long term. They actually acted like a normal basketball franchise. But Knicks fans are using the last 15 years of stress and putting it all on Phil Jackson. And guess what? Phil Jackson doesn't give a shit. He doesn't care what us fans think about our past 15 years. He only cares about the future. I'm just going to say, this is what I'm saying. Now you guys should go and have at me, all right? So that's my point right there.
Phil said that when he first came in and he made these deals and he traded Tyson Chandler and he picked up Calderon, who at the time was supposed to be the perfect triangle guard, okay, with Dallenbear at center, who was supposed to put up the same numbers that Tyson did when he left. He said that we were a playoff team his first year in New York. So I don't know where you get this, we're rebuilding 2, 3, 4 years down the road. That was not his initial plan. His initial plan was to come in. When he re-signed Melo, I'm pretty sure when they sat down in the room and in order to get Melo to stay, he didn't tell Melo, you know what, this is a 5-year rebuilding plan, so we want to keep you, but we're just going to let you know this is what we're doing. No, the plan was to get some immediate help in free agency and make us a playoff team right away. And that didn't happen. So, okay, I give him credit for being able to be smart and switch gears and tank that season midway through, knowing that we had a first-round pick. So we were able to get Porzingis. We were able to get that draft pick. So, okay, so if now you want to say we have Porzingis, now we're in a rebuilding situation. But yet, we still have a 31-year-old quasi-superstar still on our payroll. So what are we doing? Are we going to try to win now, or are we building for 2, 3, 4 years down the road? That's what I understand. Melo, he's still under the assumption that we're trying to win. From year to year, he wants to win, make the playoffs, and take his shot in the playoffs. So I don't know.
Okay.
Phil has not been able to get that second star to New York, and this was something that I thought he would be able to do. And thus
we got the second star. I hear
who's
you.
That?
I hear you. I know what you're saying. Well, we got the second. KP will be the second star, just not right now. But I know what you mean. Carmelo wants that star alongside him right now, and that's what you were expecting him to do, right?
Right.
Right?
He gave him a no trade clause. So pretty much, he's telling him, "I'm going to get you some players so we can win sooner than later." I mean, if he didn't think that he was going to win sooner than later, why would he give him that, that no-trade clause that
kind of puts
him in a box?
Let's put some responsibility on Carmelo here. Look, he knew what he was getting into also, okay? He knew that the Knicks were – he trusted that, yes, there was a chance. But he looked at the free agent landscape and said, the only guys out there are, you know, we don't have any money in Phil's first year, so I'm not going to get anybody. And then year two, who's out there right now, right? LaMarcus Aldridge, DeAndre Jordan. I mean, last year's free agency class was, you know, nothing was going to happen. So my point is that Carmelo could have gone to the Bulls. He could have been with Thibodeau. You know, now all this, oh, yeah, we should have looked at Thibodeau. Well, guess what? You could have been with Thibodeau and Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose.
He wants him in New York.
But he didn't.
He wanted him in New York.
Therefore, he needs to deal with this. The reality is that the team needs to be built the right way. No more quick fixes. No more giving money to LaMarcus Aldridge to play a position that he's not best suited for. No more, you know, chasing the wrong guys. You know, this is what I'm saying. Carmelo should know that. And I think that right now they both are kind of having to live with each other. Carmelo wants to be in New York. I agree. Of course he wants, but at the same time, he wants to win. But right now we're not in that position to be ready to do that. I mean, it's just a reality. And now they both have to deal with it. Pete, I know you probably want to jump in. What did you want to add?
Honestly, I'm all filled out. I've had enough of it with the whole nonsense. Look, Phil's done some good things. He's done some good things, right, guys? I mean, he obviously signed Lopez. Whether it was his first choice or not, doesn't matter. He's a solid player. He was solid on Portland. He's a part of the team. He's the anchor, all right? KP fell into his lap, doesn't matter. He took him. He didn't have to take him. He took him. He drafted Jerry and Grant with that trade. I think it was a good pick. I think Grant could definitely be the backup next year. Dollar picks, even though I wanted to trade him for Jeff Teague, who I still would like to have. But, look, he kept the picks. So he's done some good things, and he hasn't spent a ton of money, right? But for me, it's his condescending. Well, I'll say condescending. Just, he thinks he's rubbing people the wrong way. Back in the 90s, the way he talks to people, and he psycho babble with his stupid tweets and his idea of what kind of coaching transactional and all this transformative nonsense. Like, he speaks in riddles. He's been doing that since day one. Back in the 90s, Rambis is kind of the same way. You know, it's frustrating to me. The whole coaching situation is frustrating to me. He's so narrow-minded when it comes to that. So he's done good things. He's done bad things. So, I mean, I don't want to bash him every day. I just think you definitely drink the Kool-Aid, you know, with Phil. And that's always the argument that you're defending him. And he's not doing a great job. He's done some good things. Okay, but he's not doing $60 million worth of job. Now, it's not my money, so I don't give
a shit.
Well,
that's my point. Has he hurt us long-term? Has he done what Isaiah Thomas did? Did he trade a pick for Bargnani? That's my point. He has not hurt us long-term. He's letting this thing play out, and he hasn't made bad moves to hurt us in the long-term.
We're still not winning
yet.
He could go 5 years. He could go 5 years and not hurt us long term, but if we're not winning, how many years are we going to be losers?
Yeah.
Sooner or later,
he's only had 2 years. I mean, he's only had 2 years.
Well, this
the
is
first
this
year
is it.
Okay, so two more years, you're going to be saying he's only had 4 years.
No,
two
this
years,
is it. This
Stan
is it.
Van Gundy. Stan Van
this
Gundy
is the,
turned the Detroit Pistons made him into a playoff team in 2 years.
Yeah.
Steve Clifford turned the Charlotte Hornets
into
a playoff team in 2 years.
Right.
You know? I mean,
Young,
it could be done. Right? He's getting paid as executive more than God.
Right. Look, we didn't have the assets for Reggie Jackson. Reggie Jackson is why Detroit is in the position they're in. They already had Andre Drummond. I mean, Detroit made the moves they needed to make. They needed to, like, not re-sign Greg Monroe, and they signed good, smart players.
Wasn't there a deal somewhere in the trade deadline when that whole JR and Shumpert went down? Wasn't there some kind of Reggie Jackson scenario where possibly he could have came to Phil? You know, as an executive, you got to make that score. You got to be able to get that deal done. He hasn't been able to get that kind of deal done.
I don't know.
He doesn't want to compromise his picks, right? He wants to hold on to all his picks. And everybody wants the Knicks picks because we've been giving out picks for since the dawn of time, right? So we're not doing it anymore. So he's drawn a line. We don't know what those backfield conversations, backroom conversations have been. Maybe Reggie Jackson deal, they wanted two picks from us for the next, you know, two consecutive year, two opposite years, you know, every other year. We don't know. We don't know because Phil Jackson kind of like doesn't tell anybody anything. So we don't know what's really going on.
I mean, he actually has been talking a lot more than the previous GMs. That, to me, I mean, he met for like a half hour to a couple weeks ago. We fired Fisher. He spoke for about 25 minutes.
But he doesn't say
minutes.
Anything,
I mean,
Sean.
He's not going to say, what is he going to tell you?
Anything.
I'm going to hire this guy? He's pretty much said what he's going to do. You know, keep flexibility and, you know,
and
he
what?
Can't tell
hire,
you,
hire
he can't tell you who he's going to go for.
I mean, the whole
Let's get into that, right. He believes in system basketball, right? He believes in system basketball, triangle or not, right? And that's why he's only talked to Rambis, Walton, and Blatt, according to reports, right? Those and Blatt.
I don't know about triangle or not.
I think it's triangle, period.
It's not triangle. Well, he's talking out of both sides of his mouth there. On one end, he says system basketball.
So you really
on the end, and he says is that he wants to hire Rambis. Well, he's not saying that.
No,
but it appears
right.
that
media
he wants
that,
to.
And everybody believes him. Everybody believes
wanna,
the media. You guys
it,
believe?
He said in the press conference. He said in the press conference, I only want to hire guys, for the most part, guys that I know.
That I know. But what about
right?
when he said
so
he's
most of the guys
he
know
he
are all triangle guys.
But he said he's
right?
going to reach out to some guys. He said he's going to reach out to some other guys. He did say that.
Who?
But everyone
who did he reach out to?
Quote. He did.
Look, you guys,
he
Blatt,
only Blatt,
right?
You can look at it this way, right?
According
maybe,
to reports, right?
Maybe Blatt came in for an interview. Right, and then maybe Phil said, "Well, we'll be in touch all week." Maybe you know Phil seems like the kind of guy, like he'll call that person up and meet for scotch, and have a couple of drinks and talk basketball, talk life with them,
mm-hmm.
4, 5, 6 days in a row. I don't think he's just—he's
right.
not your conventional president.
Nope.
He's not your conventional coach. He's going to do things differently. So maybe this interview process with Blatt's going to go on for 2 weeks, so he gets to know him. You know, I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt that he's a smarter guy than you than the three of us right now. That he's going to hire
why,
the right person.
Why not? Why not have an interview? Why not? He is. We all know that as a coach and as a he's forgotten more basketball than all three of us together will ever know.
Yeah,
let me just
right.
put that out there. He's,
yeah.
you know,
what
he knows
were you gonna say,
basketball.
Like, why not? What?
And I respect that. What I was going to say was, why not? Bring in Tom Thibodeau and talk to him. Have an interview.
I agree.
Regardless if you're going to hire him or not, why close your mind to one of the top coaches that's on the free agent market? Pick his brain. You know, either way, if you sit down with him, you know, maybe you realize, you know what, we're not too far off from our differences of how we see the game. You know, we could probably compromise. But no, he shut the guy out. From reports were that Tom Thibodeau's people reached out to him, and Phil didn't even give him the courtesy of taking his call. What's up with that?
I honestly think the real story is Phil Jackson wants to coach and he can't coach. He wants to be 100% a part of practices. He wants to have say in video time, in film room, and he wants to be he wants to have his coaching direction pushed down through the organization to the coach. And I think the only person that's willing to do that is Kurt Rambis. So it's a bad thing, but maybe it's also a good thing that Phil Jackson will be kind of the coach of the team, will be a part of the film sessions and a part of the practices. But it's also a problem because it's never worked before. It's never happened before.
You can't do it
like that.
I mean, regardless of how great of a coach he was, if he's not physically going to be coaching the team on day every day, you can't do it. You can't do
it.
I mean,
I'm
saying
that maybe that's the reason why he didn't bring in Thibodeau. Because, you know, Frank always says it to us. The president's the president, the GM's the GM, and the coach is coach. And it doesn't filter down through there. So you let the coach coach. You had to let Fisher coach. Fisher went off and did his own thing, and he fired him because of it. Whether that was a good situation or not, Fisher wasn't taking advantage of Rambis and Clemens and Phil Jackson's mind, and he was doing his own thing. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, we can argue. But the fact is that Phil Jackson wants to be involved. As soon as Rambis took over, Jackson was involved 100%. And maybe that's what
and
he
they
wants.
Still lost every. They still lost every freaking game.
What did that do? I hear you. Dude, you're right. You're 100% right. But maybe that's what he wants. That's why maybe he's talking to Blatt to see if he can still have that kind of input, because we all know that behind Blatt, you can't come from up atop the towers of MSG and come into practice and take over a practice.
No,
that will make the coach impotent. We can't do that.
What do you think, Sean? So, do you think that if he brings in Blatt, do you think that he still wants to have the type of arrangement where he can kind of, jump in at any time, or is he going to let Blatt be the coach? Blatt is so accomplished. He's been around. Mm-hmm. He's been successful, overseas.
Right.
And, his track record warrants that, when he comes in to do a job, he has the leeway to be the coach. So I can't see a guy like him that accomplished to let Phil Jackson look over his shoulder.
Yeah, go ahead. So I'll let you talk in a second, but maybe Blatt wants that. So we don't know what Blatt's mindset is. Maybe Blatt wants to come in and be a part of an organization from top to bottom that's gonna put in a system for the next 10 years here. Maybe Mills is telling him that. Yeah, let's all be a team. Let's all work together. You're going to pick the mind of a legend in Phil Jackson. You're going to pick a good mind in Rambis, who actually is a good assistant coach. He's a great head assistant coach, whatever way you want to call him. So maybe Blatt wants that. We don't know. And also, when Jackson leaves in 2 years, Blatt can take that offense, cater it to the any way he wants it. Everywhere you read, he's an adaptive coach. He adapts to every situation. So maybe he wants this.
Right.
Maybe the conversation is happening right now, over a couple of drinks someplace, and they're talking about this. So maybe
I can't imagine
he
wants
fit.
This.
Maybe he's not.
Sean,
okay.
the article you sent me the other day, Sean, he seems like the kind of coach that he's confident in his abilities, and there were some people who questioned him in Cleveland, and he was quick to let them know. You kidding me? I was one of the best coaches out there.
Yep.
When I was, so I can't imagine he's going to come.
Maybe
in
that
like,
humbled him.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe the experience in Cleveland humbled him.
Coaching the team to the NBA Finals? I don't know. I mean, it seems to me like he did a damn pretty good job, despite what everybody else thought.
Well, Phil Jackson, what I've heard, Phil Jackson was very hurt from the Derek Fisher experience. This was a handpicked guy, a guy he thought he would be able to mentor, a guy who pretty much, according to Phil, did not communicate issues to Phil or ask for help from Phil or any of his guys. So now you have Phil in a position where he's the guy. Ultimately, everything's on his head. He needs to make the choice. So he's in a position. Do I pick a guy that I trust? Okay, and that's the guy, Rambis. He trusts him 100% without a doubt. Okay, that is done. Or do I pick a guy who's had a history of clashing with his managers, Thibodeau? Okay, he's a great coach. But he had a history of that, and the managers are probably terrible. I'm just saying, okay? Or,
Phil did the same thing when he was with Chicago.
But think about it. If you're making the decision, you're Phil Jackson, are you going to take a chance with a guy who's clashed a bunch of times with management? And I'm just saying, think about it. So, do I pick
Phil
as a great coach?
That's the problem here.
No, but hold on.
You guys
need to put yourself in his position, okay? Am I
going
to pick a guy?
I see where you're going.
I'm going to say, if you're going to pick a guy who might clash with me, okay, or doesn't philosophically believe that I believe, or am I going to pick a guy that I will do everything that I say and I trust in Rambis, or the third guy, the guy that gets along with the guy who's eventually going to take over for me because I'm 72 years old, who's Mills, okay? And that's why I think he's open to Blatt, right? So Mills, I think, probably talked him into considering Blatt even more seriously, but as we know, when he was an advisor at Detroit, he actually, Chris Herring reported this, he suggested David Blatt as an offensive coordinator for that club at least, right? So he respects Blatt as a basketball mind, no doubt about it, okay? And so this is what I'm saying. He doesn't want to get burned by anybody else. He thought he had utmost trust in Fisher, and whatever happened, okay? He screwed up, and he knows that he's the one that screwed up, and he needs to get this one right. So imagine him hiring a guy that he's going to clash with. You know how much Frank Isola would love the stories about Thibodeau and Phil clashing for the next 5 years at MSG?
No,
I mean,
for sure.
I'm just saying, that's the reality.
I hear what you're saying, and it makes sense on that in that way. But it's okay to clash sometimes. You know, sometimes
but
the coach
the time,
wants to do it his way. Sometimes the coach wants to tell the GM, let me coach.
Right.
I mean, get out of here.
He needs to.
All right?
He needs to.
You
look,
know?
Right.
There's nothing
he
wrong with
to.
That.
I understand.
Phil clashed with management all the
thing.
Time, and he won 11 titles. So,
that's
a
healthy
thing.
But that's why
it's a healthy
I
thing.
Keep,
that's good.
That's why
you don't want a guy
back
that you could just
the
tell all
thing.
The time. You
I
want a guy who can just dictate?
Okay, right.
You know?
No, I know. Pete, you were saying?
I keep coming back to the same thing, that he wants to be a part of the coaching in the film room and in the practices. He wants to be a part of that, and if he hires
right.
Tom Thibodeau, he probably can't do that because that's unheard of. If he hires Blatt and he has a good relationship with Blatt, then he can do that. With Rambis, he can 100% do it.
Agree. Another thing with Thibodeau is that he did come from the Jeff Van Gundy tree. I don't know if I fully buy in to this notion that MSG and Jeff Van Gundy clashed like crazy. And suddenly one of Van Gundy's right hands as an assistant coach in Thibodeau is going to be happy to walk back into MSG and take direction from Phil Jackson. I believe the reporting. I believe Begley's report. I believe the reporting. Fine. But I just find it hard to believe that him knowing the dysfunction historically would actually be willing to go into a situation like New York and be Phil Jackson's, do what Phil Jackson says, while he could be in Minnesota where he could have full control. Do you really think that if that was a chance that he would have picked the Knicks over Minnesota? That to me is really crazy to believe.
We'll never know
because they never had a conversation because Phil never
picked
up a
why,
damn phone.
Yeah. Why even have it?
Okay.
Again, why even have it? Because the moment they knew, people knew that he was having
know.
A conversation. Because
do
that's
your
what
due
happened
diligence.
With Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr did it, and Golden State came calling quickly after Kerr was in talks with Phil. Okay, my point is that, you know, obviously shit happens, right? So we're all making this assumption that, oh, if they just talk, Thibodeau will be the coach. It's a lot different than that. And I just want to talk a little bit about Blatt and his acumen because we're talking about him. You know, remember how I remember Dolan and Phil Jackson talking about the fact that they talked for months about how much power Phil Jackson would have. Phil needed to make sure Dolan was not going to interfere, right? So that obviously was something that they discussed. But they went with Mills. I think they went on several trips together. I don't know. They did this whole, like, courtship thing. I bet you Phil Jackson is doing the same type of thing. Pete, I think you hit it right on the head with David Blatt. It may not even be a week or two, but he's going to take his time to make this call right. And the fact that Kurt Rambis is not the coach right now is not a smokescreen because Phil doesn't give a shit what the media says. I think he's doing his due diligence to be open to candidates and to see what happens. And look, we didn't know he was going to pick KP. We didn't know he was going to fire Fisher. We didn't know these things until he did them. And I think he's does a good job of keeping reports under wraps until they happen. So I'm just saying, don't buy into everything that the media believes because the media needs to report a different story every day to make sure they sell papers. So that's all I'm going to say about that.
Well, Luke Walton is still out there. So to me, he's not pulling the trigger on a coach while, you know, the hottest candidate and also pretty much his son is out there, you know, waiting, looking for a coaching job. So until, you know, Golden State, you know, wins the title or is eliminated and he's able to get a full interview with him, which even though we already heard that he already had an interview, that's another story. But until then, you know, I think that's part of the reason why he hasn't really pulled the trigger on a coach too, because that would be
good
his
point.
Number one candidate.
Maybe he meets with the Lakers. Maybe he meets with Sacramento, with Houston. Oh, Houston. So he's going to already have an interview scheduled with Houston and L.A. Maybe he meets with them and told Phil, let me interview with everyone and get back to you. Let me see what happens. And maybe he said, you know what, I don't want to deal with this shit in New York because you, Phil, are telling me that you're probably only going to be here for a year or two. I'm only going to commit if you tell me you're going to commit for the next 5 years, right?
I mean, that only makes sense. And maybe Phil's
not
ready
that.
To commit for the next five.
He's not going
to
do
Phil's going to commit for the next two, but he's not going to commit for the next five. That's why a pairing of Mills and Blatt, even in the first press conference, Phil Jackson talked about handing the reins to Mills. He said Mills was going to be the guy that he was going to take over. So, to me, that makes the most sense. With Rambis in the, either an assistant general manager role or, again, the associate head coach. But I think right now what's happening is the foundation of a conversation between Blatt and Phil, where Blatt says, look, I agree with some principles of the triangle, but I'm not going to run it fully. I got to be flexible. And if you can't if you can't give me that, Phil, I'm not going to be here. And that's the conversation they're having right now. And that's what I think
that
really
sounds
happening.
Good.
You know?
But hopefully Phil will be flexible enough to say, okay, I'll give you that. You're an experienced coach. I trust your ability. You know, I want to see, you know, a system basketball with, you know, five guys on a string, you know, ball movement on offense, regardless if it's triangle or Princeton offense or whatever it is, you know, as long as you're doing that, I'm not going to bother you. So if he can do that, then that's good. You know, hopefully he can do that. But it seems like he just wants to win with the triangle. He wants to prove that the triangle is the greatest offense ever in NBA history, and I can resurrect the team using my offense. It seems like that's all he cares about. So hopefully that's not the case.
Now, when Phil was advising Detroit, right, and he offered the name of David Blatt to Tom Gores, I think his name is the owner,
right,
and they picked Mo Cheeks instead. So when Phil says he wants to interview people that he knows, you know, he obviously must know somewhat David Blatt. He wouldn't just recommend the guy to anybody.
Right.
He obviously knows of him. He knows him. He must know him personally at some point. He must have met him coaching search. And it makes the most sense because he will take over when Phil leaves. He will change his offense to what he needs to change it to. And also, look, the guy got bashed in Cleveland. You know, whether right or wrong, he made some mistakes with the media and condescending a little bit because he was definitely accomplished. But remember, Kerr wanted to hire him as his lead assistant in Golden State.
Yep.
And he would have been there.
What does that tell
you? He would have been there,
okay,
if it wasn't for the Cleveland job. Okay, so the guy definitely has an aura about him, and he has a sense of accomplishment. He's the right person to put into the job right now, short-term, long-term, and Phil needs to do it. And I don't mean like the second, but he needs to do it in the next couple of weeks. I'm not waiting for Luke Walton because I don't think he's coming here anyway. I don't think he wants to come here. I think Phil knows that. I think Phil already has an idea of it.
Right.
And my opinion is that just bring Blatt in here. I want to lay a foundation here of a head coach. Is that right? This is our coach, guys. Announce it to the media and prepare for the draft and for free agency. That's what I would do.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to shut everybody up because everyone's talking about who's going to be the coach. This guy wasn't interviewed. This guy was interviewed. This guy, Rambis, Shaw, you know, all this nonsense. Just hire Blatt. Hire him. It makes the most sense long term.
I'll take Blatt.
But,
as long as it's not Rambis, if that's the compromise candidate, I'll take him. Okay, but please, none of this Kurt Rambis crap. Come on, man. Kurt Rambis, he's 100 games under 500 as a coach. How could you put this guy in the head coaching position in New York and be serious and prop him out there and saying this is the best guy, that qualified candidate?
Yeah.
Come on, man. We're smarter than that. New York is, you know, a lot of people may say that New York fans are not as sophisticated as they claim they are, but you can't do that. You can't. It's not going to go over well.
No, it's not going to go over well. We'll be locally. Will be an embarrassment, will be the joke of the league, and then nationally, of course, will be the joke of the league. Because Kurt Rambis, I always say it guys through text, Kurt Rambis wouldn't be a coach in the NBA right now if it wasn't for Phil at all. You know, he's not on anybody's list of top 30 coaches to coach all these teams, right? So let's just be honest here. He wouldn't be coaching. So the fact that he's even a part of the organization is unbelievable. And if Blatt comes, he's going to stay. He'll probably be the lead assistant. And then I saw little write stories about, you know, Blatt and Rambis fighting and all that bullshit. And I don't care about any of that stuff. You know, you want to cure it all? Win some games. That's it.
Right.
Hey, Sean, Frank is on.
You know, I always tell my nephew, who's 18 years old, I said, you have no idea what it was like when the Knicks were good every year. You know, we always talk about, like if they ever won a championship, it would be the biggest thing in the city, past the Yankees, past the Rangers when the Rangers won. It will be the biggest thing in New York City. And if not, you know, it will see new Knicks fans sprouting up all over the place. You have to win. And I think that if they get the right team, they can win some games. And that will cure all the bad ills towards Phil. He just has to win some games. And how do you get there? It's everyone has their own opinion.
Sure. Well, we're about ready to wrap up, but before we do, you know, Frank had some issues getting on, and he's on the line now. Frank Nutt is joining us. Frank, we wanted to get your 2 cents. For the last half hour, we've been talking about Blatt. We kind of covered Thibodeau territory and why I think he wasn't even considered. So I know we kind of are on a time crunch, so we got a couple minutes, but we'll leave it up to you. David Blatt versus everything else that was out there and available. Let's just get into some X's and O's, I think, first. Would you be satisfied with David Blatt as a hire? And you could talk about other head coach-related issues bouncing off of that. But the first question is, would you be okay with David Blatt being the next coach of the Knicks?
First of all, what's up, fellas? Sorry I'm a little late.
Hey,
I was at basketball practice. My phone died, and I went to call in the hallway, and it was dead. So I apologize. I had to go home and charge it. But I'm good now. David Blatt, I would be okay with him being the Knicks head coach. I haven't really rationalized yet if it's because I just don't want Kurt Rambis so much that I'm okay with anyone else, or I actually really like what he does. I remember when he came over, they talked about him as a player development coach, as someone who had a lot of experience at all different levels of coaching, as player development, as an assistant coach, as a head coach on the national level, overseas, obviously now in the NBA. I think his track record's shown enough where he can do the job. I think a little bit of what he wanted to do and what they sold him in Cleveland was tainted when you have LeBron James come in. I mean, you know, you guys remember he was hired before LeBron came back. And I think – you know, we would be talking about him in a different light if he maybe came into a different situation. I think he's perfect for Porzingis. He's watched Euro players play for the last 20 years of his NBA career. Maybe he works well with Willie, maybe gets him to come over this year, utilizes Porzingis in a way, and maybe that's enticing to Phil because, you know, he was brought in to work with Tristan Thompson and Kyrie Irving and a lot of the young guys that they had, Andrew Wiggins, so maybe it's the right direction that the Knicks need to go in, and I think he'd be a good guy to do it. As far as anybody else, you know, I don't take seriously the point that Luke Walton has to wait. Atlanta is still in the playoffs and look, the New Jersey Nets hired an Atlanta assistant coach. So obviously, you know, we know that it can be done. And I think for Luke, he either stays in Golden State or goes to the Lakers. I don't think there's any other option. Would I like him in New York over Blatt? I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I think for Phil, I don't think Phil can take a chance with a first time head coach. Because all the reports, and I know Sean, you love Walton, and I like Walton too. I like everything that he stands for. I love the pedigree of player that he was turning into a head coach. I think the type of player he was translates to head coach because you watch a lot and you see a lot. And I can tell you guys.
Frank, can you tell Frank, speak up one more time. I think you're breaking up.
We lost Frank.
Yeah, we lost Frank. I guess his phone died again.
he got dumped. Frank got dumped.
Well, I'm going to keep it on. I'm going to keep his mic open in case he gets back. He just got call was dropped. So, yeah, we're talking about Walton. I think we're on the same page with Walton being fine, Blatt being fine, and we don't want Kurt Rambis to be our coach. That's pretty much, I guess, to summarize the whole thing. We'll wait a couple more seconds. I want to make sure Frank's able to sign off. but I know we have to close down the show. We're going to have another show, I'd say. Let's try to have one in the next couple of weeks where we could talk about the impact. What's that?
Okay.
Well, with the draft, we're
going to say.
But yeah, eventually the draft. But what I wanted to talk about was heading into you know, July 1st, say David Blatt is a coach or a first-time coach and Walton is selected, how is that going to affect Carmelo Anthony? Do we really see Carmelo Anthony eventually wanting to opt out, you know, say, trade me to Cleveland or L.A. so I could go help Chris Paul out?
I think only if Rambis. Only if Rambis is the coach, Melo says, I'm out of here.
Yeah. So I,
but maybe
Greg,
even not then. I don't know. Melo loves it here. He wants to stay here. So who knows?
Do you think that he's going to want to stay?
I don't know.
No,
didn't he just say
what,
today? Right? Didn't he just say he wants to stay here? He wants to retire here today? So I don't.
Yeah, he did.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean.
Yeah.
All indications are, every time you hear him open his mouth, he's talking about he wants to stay in New York. He wants to stay in New York. So
yeah.
As far
he's
as I
right
know,
there.
I got to trust. I got to take him at his word. The guy, he
yeah.
loves. We all know. He loves New York, and
well,
he loves his money.
I agree.
So,
well, so we'll talk a little
know.
Bit about that. We'll talk a little bit about the free agents that are coming up. But before we do, I want to kind of end with some quotes from Phil Jackson's introductory press conference.
Oh, God.
Not to, like, rub
oh,
it in anybody's
God.
Face. But this is this
trying
is
to brainwash us.
So this is a timeline for a turnaround. He says, we're not anticipating time. We're going to make one step at a time. Okay, on the promise of 2015, he says, we're not particularly in the running for free agents this year. There's not a great crop that's coming out this particular year. Next year does have a group of guys together. Steve and I are going to work on how to manage our roster and our financials so we can have an impact in that area. We know we need another solid contributor, someone that can score and help Carmelo along. Okay, so just, you know, just giving you an idea about, like, he never said this is going to happen at this time. We're going to find these guys. I'm going to put my rings on the table. But he did. This is my favorite thing that he. This was day one when he was first. This was day one. I can send you. I'll post the links on SI.com, March 18th, 2014. This is the quote that he ended with, remembering old advice from Red Holzman. New York is not the easiest place to live, but if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. We're going to make it here, okay? So he wants a challenge. He knows how tough it's going to be, and he's just going to plow through with what he thinks is right. We may agree or may not agree, but at a certain point, we have to trust a guy who's got 11 championships, just like Carmelo said, right, earlier today. He goes, yeah, I got no choice but to trust him. So do we, right? That's what I'm going to say about that. So if you guys
all right.
have any comments before we end the show, we could do that and sign off. For good?
He better win this year.
He
better get us to the playoffs this year. That's all I got to say.
I agree.
All that sounds well and good.
Yeah.
I want to see a significant improvement next year. I want to see a playoff team. I want to see us start turning the corner. We don't have to win a championship, which obviously most likely we're not. But I want to see us start making some improvement toward being a good team next year.
Well,
yeah.
If we improve
that
by
comes
15
with a new
wins
backcourt,
again,
so we'll see what they do.
We'll be 47 wins. So we will talk to everybody about free agency and Carmelo next time, unless Phil Jackson picks a coach before then. If that happens, we'll try to get on that night or the day after and talk about it. Until next time, thanks for listening to the Knicks Tonight podcast. Follow Frank at FrankNutt, N-U-T-T, Greg at GStrong011. Myself at SAQUINO34 and Peep_ARTURI. All right, everyone. Thanks
all right,
for listening.
Fellas.
Have a good night.
Take care, guys.
Good night, guys.
Take it easy.